And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
The Washington Wizards, who began the season 17-32, who everybody had written off, myself included, and my guest included, by the beginning of April, by well before the beginning of April, they're going to the playoffs. They got the number 8 seed. They secured it on Thursday night with just an absolute demolition of the Pacers, 142-115. And honestly, the game didn't feel as close as the score. They just destroyed them, starting really in the second quarter. It was exactly like every other Wizards-Pacers game this season, where Westbrook got to the hole, Beal got to the hole. They killed him in transition. They killed him getting to the paint. Basically, everybody played well. Bertans missed threes again. Other than that, everybody played well, and the Wizards, just after a game where they played a really disappointing game and they all admitted it against Boston, they come out and look completely different against Indiana, who I've referred to as a matchup nightmare about 12 different times over the last 2 months. And I guess the Wizards 4-0 record against Indiana proves that the Wizards are a matchup nightmare for the Pacers, and the Pacers season is over, and the Wizards are playing the 76ers in the first round of the playoffs. And recording with me at 12:15 in the morning after that thriller of a game is the only person who stays up past midnight to come on this podcast, Ben Standing.
It's Wizards during dark.
Wizards through dark. That's what I should do. I should change the preposition for every episode. Give it a new preposition. Wizards between dark after that.
Sure. I don't know what you're talking about. I always believed that the Wizards would figure out a way to make the playoffs. I never doubted it. I don't know what to say about the rest of you.
Clearly.
Yeah. I mean, I think the craziest part was like how it was so, for such a big game, for what it was, like not just to make the playoffs, but if they lose, you have to answer a whole bunch of questions about the future of this franchise that they at least now can delay for a bit. And it was so anticlimactic because the game was such a romp. It's not like, even if there's like a 20-point game, you know, when the other team gets it down to like 14 once or twice, you go, oh boy, this wasn't even within like 30.
No. I mean, the Wizards were up. They were up 38 at one point. I mean, you know, the Pacers run was what brought it down to being only a 27-point game, you know? The starters, Scott Brooks pulled the starters with 7 minutes left. 7 minutes left. That's how much they were winning by. 7 minutes left in an elimination game. It was like, no need to play this. No need to play Beal and Westbrook. I mean, Beal played 28 minutes in the elimination game. That's how much they just wrecked them. I thought everybody played well. I thought the centers were really the story. I mean, honestly, even Wizards Twitter's favorite player, Alex Len, I thought came out. I thought he played very well defensively on Sabonis, who was great when he was on the floor, but he was in foul trouble all night, and he fouled out. I thought Len did a good job. You know, Lopez came in and he played. He didn't even play in the second half, I don't think. He comes in the first half and just goes on a run where they're feeding him in the post every freaking time, and he's hitting every hook shot. And Gafford was incredible. I mean, Gafford was – he really saved one of his best games of the season for the most important one. He was great.
Yeah, I mean, he was. I thought that, you know, Scott Brooks postgame said that, like, every player had – like, it's not so much that the team had specific runs, and like every player had like a 5 or 6 minute personal run where they did a lot of really good things, and that's what, like, you need, of course, of a game. And it felt like he was kind of right. It felt like everybody had a moment or two or three where they really stood out. You mentioned Len, you know, so many, you know, Hachimura did, Robin Lopez, you mentioned Gafford, obviously, and then, of course, the stars. So, yeah, and look, we talked about this a bunch the last podcast. For whatever the reason, Russell Westbrook was not, you know, he was not fully charged in that game. This one was the opposite, and the team responded, I think, in turn. This is what we've seen all year. It's not, it doesn't seem like it's that complicated of a scenario. Russell Westbrook comes hot, the team follows suit, and yeah, they you know, collectively had a much better showing, not just production wise, but, you know, energy wise and everything.
Yeah. I mean, the amazing thing about Westbrook, and I say it all the time, is, you know, he can have a 25, 15, and 15 game, and you could be like, this wasn't a good Westbrook game. And then tonight he has 18 and 8 and 15, which is obviously a very gaudy line for a normal player. But of late, it's not really very eye popping to see Westbrook get 8, 18, 8, and 15. But I thought he was excellent tonight. I thought he was great. I thought he controlled the offense. He set the tone. First play of the game, he gets to the hoop. He kicks for Howell Neto for a three. Right there. I mean, the Wizards made more threes in the first, like, 7 minutes of this game than they made during the entire Boston game. And this entire game was going to be about getting to the paint. And, man, the Pacers' defense is so soft. It is so, you know, you look at the numbers, it's not as bad as the eye test tells you. But then you see the eye test, you see them defend, and it's like, man, they just let you get to the rim. And their coverages push you to the middle. And that makes a lot of sense when Miles Turner's there. And when Miles Turner isn't there, it's just like, if you have a dynamic guard who can get to the rim, and the Wizards have two of them, and the defense is helping you get to the middle, it's like, and they're getting met with, you know, big men who aren't Miles Turner. It, all of a sudden, it turns into exactly what the Wizards have done to them all year, which is they just absolutely destroy them. They killed them this year. I mean, Russell Westbrook had 15 assists in this game, and it tied his season low against the Pacers. That's
insane.
Against the Pacers this year. You know, he had a 24 assist game, a 21 assist game, and two 15 assist games, because he's just getting to the rim and he's creating. And I thought Beal just looked more fluid. I don't know if he's healthier. He wasn't talking after the game. He wasn't talking after the game like he was any different physically. I thought he moved better. I thought he took off better. He obviously threw down that dunk that ended up with the epic picture of Westbrook with Beal hanging on the rim in the background, which was an incredible screen back grab from the broadcast. If you haven't seen that, go look that up. It's all over social media, and it's really an amazing freeze frame. But I thought Beal moved better, and the Pacers have a way of giving guards a little more flight. But you know, on top of that, they were good. They both played extremely well.
Yeah, for sure. During the game, especially once it became so apparent there would be a positive post game, I sent out a tweet about asking people for questions. And I only bring this up because almost all the questions have to do with the next series, which we haven't discussed, or I shouldn't say the next series, but the actual playoff series that the Wizards are now getting themselves in.
Okay, Ben, Ben, I'm handing the podcast to you for the rest of this episode.
Wow.
Because I literally haven't looked at one of the questions. So you're the host.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody.
Host it, run the questions. You host the podcast. You know how to do this.
I'd like to thank everybody for this honor. I'm not really sure what to say, but I appreciate it. So everything is about the next game, and all the questions, or most of them, really kind of have to do with the same basic premise. I could pick any of them, but we'll just start with, well, we'll start with this from at Weasel Armor. Which big is best suited to take on Embiid for extended minutes? And every question on some level, it feels like, is some version of, how on earth are the Wizards going to stop Joel Embiid, as good as the centers were tonight? You know, it's one thing going up against what Indiana has, nothing to go up against the guy who, you know, probably finishes second in the MVP voting. But that said, specifically, I guess, if you had to pick one guy for extended minutes, where would you go?
I mean, it's a good question. I understand why it's the most common question. It's the question. It's the number one thing I wonder. I could see Gafford seriously struggling with fouls against him. I could see Lopez seriously struggling on the perimeter against him. I could see Len struggling. I think they're all going to struggle. He's Joel Embiid. I think my answer would be Lopez. If I'm not wrong, I think Lopez has had a little success making him uncomfortable just because I think Lopez is going to be the best post defender against him. And if Embiid is shooting jumpers, the guy is an amazing mid-range jump shooter. He is an amazing face-up guy. He's had a hell of a year shooting threes. There is no optimal way for him to go against you. But him in the post scares me more than anything. And I think Lopez is the best post defender, technically, of any of those guys. And he's got more brawn than any of those guys to just match how absolutely massive of a human being Embiid is. But look, ultimately, what it's going to come down to is not who defends him the best individually. It's going to come down to how well the Wizards team defense, how the Wizards play team defense on possessions that he has the ball in the post. Because they're going to double him. They always double him. And they try different types of double teams against him. They try hard doubles. They try soft doubles. They try doubles where guys come around from the weak side when his back is turned and somebody tries to slide in from the baseline and poke the ball away. They try all different kinds of doubles against Embiid. And they've actually done an okay job in terms of that. If you're going to disrupt Embiid, it's going to be because he is prone to turning it over when he gets doubled in the post. And he's a lot better at that now than he used to be. But that's the closest thing to an offensive weakness that he has still. And so you have to be really confident, really decisive, and you have to play incredible, elite, and intuitive and communicative team defense in those moments. Otherwise, you're just going to end up with Embiid kicking out, and you're going to end up with Tobias Harris shooting wide open corner threes all game. And obviously, that's going to go horribly for you. So it's an extremely difficult proposition. But I would say Lopez is, I think Lopez would be the best. I could easily be wrong. Embiid is insane. You know, sometimes these things are just unpredictable, and maybe Len ends up the best. Maybe Gafford ends up the best because of his athleticism, because it disrupts him. But I would just not say Gafford because of the fouls. Yeah, I'd say Lopez, but look, like if they want any success, it's got to be basically perfect team defense. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, So I'll just say I think they're screwed. By that, I just mean there is no answer to the question, because I think for the reasons you said, Gafford for sure. But as we saw, as we've seen, he'll just get in foul trouble, seemingly. And Lopez. Yeah, it makes sense from like a size standpoint, but athletically, he's going to be challenged in some ways. And Len is, kind of just what he is. So there is nobody that I would feel particularly good at for an extended stretch. And you're just going to have to hope that, like you said, that whoever's out there can hold up enough. And with team defense, they catch a break or two. Ironically, obviously, look, in a perfect world, the Wizards have some type of one center who could do the job, maybe sort of the way like Gortat did a few years ago when he was here in general. But ironically, the fact that they have the three centers, all of whom play, is almost sort of like the best case scenario if you're not going to have that, in that you have three guys who've all played, obviously, for a long time. It's not just like, well, a team has 18 fouls, but one guy never plays. Like, no, all these guys do play. So, like, the question that at AXHANE99 asked, is it safe to assume that the three-center rotation will be here to stay in the playoffs? And I would say, as much as we all talked about, it seems likely that maybe one of them fades off, I think it's definitely here to stay in this series because, as we're saying, I don't think any one of the three is really going to be great. The 18-foul thing is going to be legitimately in play. And you're just going to have to figure out how to cobble something together over the course of 48.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
They might actually use all 18 fouls too. They like,
yeah.
They might just start destroying him. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point. That's a good point. I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, the three center rotation, if they use the three center rotation against the Pacers in an elimination game, they're using it in game one against Joel Embiid. If they're using it in an elimination game, they're using it. I don't know why people continue to think that they're just going to go away from it randomly when every single indication is they're using it. They've started Alex Len in like 28 consecutive games. They're using
it. I mean, certainly not. Yeah, if Brooks didn't go away from it with like the last game or two of the regular season or these play-in games, he's not, you know, this is what they're doing. And, you know, like we're saying,
I mean, tonight was as do or die as you can get. Tonight was your entire life is on the line. Your season is on the line. You have to play. It's the equivalent of a game seven in terms of how you coach it. You have to play what gives you the best chance tonight, and nothing in the future matters. That's how you have to coach that game, and they ran a three-center rotation. That is what they are going to do in the playoffs too. It has to be.
That's all. For sure. All right, another question here from at the Moez, M-O-E-E-Z. Simple question, but big picture. Do we, as in the Wizards, have any hope whatsoever for this Philly series? I mean, you know, we're talking about the center situation, but obviously, you got Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal going to be matched up against, you know, with Ben Simmons out there. You know, I think that Tybalt is going to be a fascinating defensive matchup. As he is, you know, with him and Simmons, you have two of the better defensive guards out there, and you know that's going to be not necessarily shut down the Wizards' hand, but it's, you know, probably limits their ceiling, perhaps at least a little bit. Maybe, I don't know. We'll see. And then, you know, the Tobias Harris thing is Davis Bertans going to actually start. He did make a couple threes late, but he looked a little bit off these last, you know, two games. Is there, who is that random player, if the Wizards are going to pull something out that can actually, you know, spark? Like, what's it going to take? But ultimately, the answer may just be Philly has too much. I keep making the joke, although it's serious, that the Wizards might have the second and third best player in the series, but don't ask me about 4-10. So, What say you? Do the Wizards have any hope whatsoever to beat Philly in this series?
I mean, no. When was the last time that an 8 beat a 1? Must have been the Derrick Rose series where Philadelphia beat Chicago, but Derrick Rose tore his ACL in game 1. I mean, there's a caveat for all of these 8s that beat 1s. I guess the last time it happened without some sort of extraordinary injury must have been the We Believe Warriors beat the Mavs, and that was 07. So it really doesn't happen. You could sneak a game or two, you could push them, but it's not really a thing that happens. So I'm not saying the Wizards are going to win this series, but they've been playing well, and Westbrook and Beal is capable of winning a game on his own. What I'm curious about is what the defensive matchups are going to look like for Philly, because Philly is the best defensive team in the Eastern Conference. That's why they ended up number one. They are the best defensive team in the East. I mean, look at the defenders on that team. I put Ben Simmons second for defensive player of the year. Joel Embiid is a defensive player of the year caliber defender. I mean, he's extraordinary. Tybalt, I didn't have Tybalt on all defense. I gave him serious consideration. If he had played I gave him serious consideration. I don't know who was the first guy off of my ballot. He might have been. He was on the spreadsheet. He's on a lot of other people's all defensive teams, and I have no problem with that. He's an excellent defender. Danny Green is still not 100% of what we know as Danny Green, but still extremely reliable. Tobias Harris can do stuff. Dwight Howard protects the rim really well. I mean, they have so many good defensive players and so many different guys that are going to be able to throw at Westbrook and throw at Beal and make them uncomfortable. And then, you know, we talked about how Westbrook and Beal dominate the Pacers because of the way that team is constructed without Miles Turner. They let you get to the rim, and then they have nowhere at the rim, no one at the rim to defend you. Well, Philly doesn't let you get to the rim. And then when you do get to the rim, Joel Embiid is there, who is absolutely absurd protecting it. So I think Philly is really, really good. Clearly, they're the number one seed. But they're like, I think they're really good. They could be a monster. That defense is so stout. It is so stout. And I don't know. I don't see it. It's really tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to see how that gets done for historic reasons, and just the individual matchup between already struggle. How do you stop Embiid? And then the fact that Philly has these perimeter defenders that, you know, will, like I said, in theory, at a minimum, sort of cap the Wizards guards upside that makes for a tough challenge. But last question, because I know we need to go. This one's from a at Ted Leone says this might be a fake tweet, though I'm not sure. I can't really tell. This might be a fake tweet I just made up in my head. What if they do? If they don't win this series, if my team doesn't win this series, what will I need to see to continue the status quo? Because that is the other question that you and I were getting is, well, what happens with everything else that's going on here? So, like, you know, okay, they made it this far. And we don't know definitively whether or not if they had lost this game, if that would have meant they were going to make big changes or not. But okay, now they're in this series. If they win it, obviously you would think, well, obviously you're going to stay with the group. But what do you think it would take to avoid to have Ted Leontis stay with what's going on here?
Well, Ted, first off, thank you for listening to the podcast. It's really
big, you know, big fan of Perturb. I personally like Wizards Between Dark, but, you know.
Wizards Amongst Dark. Am I answering as if I'm getting into character and I'm being Ted Leontis and I'm trying to answer as if what Ted would do, or just answer with my personal thoughts?
It's late. I would just go with your own voice and cadence, but, you know, take the fake question I just made up very seriously.
I mean, I wouldn't let a playoff series, a first round playoff series as an 8 seed, decide whether or not I keep somebody. That's what I would say. I would keep somebody if I think they're a good coach for a good team. And whether or not you beat the Philadelphia 76ers shouldn't really play a part in it. They've had Scott Brooks for 5 years. They have had him with this roster for 1 year. They've seen how he coaches them when they're not good, when they're 17 and 32. They've seen how he coaches them when they are good, when they're 17 and 6. They've seen how the players respond to him. They've seen how the locker room responds to him. They've seen his game strategy. Whether they get swept by a more talented team, or they put up a great fight against a more talented team, or they somehow beat a more talented team. I mean, I don't see... Unless something extraordinary happens in the series, which is beyond, you know, the realm of what we're considering realistic, you know, I feel like your mind, whether you want to bring them back or you don't want to bring them back, like, it should be, to me, that's good process. It should be made up by now. So I wouldn't let a first round playoff series in a 1-8 matchup, in one that we agree is not a great matchup for them either. Like, they don't have an ideal Embiid defender. Not that necessarily one exists, but you know what I mean. I wouldn't let that impact my choice on a first round series. Now, look, if they make, you know, the Eastern Conference Finals or something, then, you know, of course. But we're talking about within the realm of realistic possibilities, you know. So that's my personal thoughts.
Keen listeners are aware right now, and I think everybody, I'm sure, had the same reaction I did when Fred said a certain thing, which basically said that when it comes to evaluating the situation, it isn't just about this series against Philadelphia. In fact, what Ted Leontis needs to do is trust the process.
You know what's interesting? Which I should dig up this quote. Ted Leonsis, about 2.5 years ago, he did a press conference when the Wizards played that game in London. This was January of 2019. And he did a media scrum with the media who went all the way out to London to go to the game. This was the day that he had the quote saying, "We will never, ever tank." And before he said, "We will never, ever tank," he talked about how he didn't think the process worked because they lost so many. You know what? I don't want to misquote him. I'm going to find this because I wrote about it that night. And I was thinking about that today and just how it's, you know, now it's "We will never, ever tank" versus the process, you know? And it's just, yeah, it's just the juxtaposition of that quote. I'm going to find this right now.
For what it's worth, maybe if during one of the other podcasts we do in the series, like the idea of the process, to the people who think it didn't work or whatever, you are nuts. It totally worked. It worked. I mean, you could argue that like they did a couple things, like it was just like just so negative for the fans. I get that, but you end up with Embiid and Simmons and you're the one seed. This is the whole point, that you take as many shots as you can to try to get guys like that, and then you go from there. And the fact that Embiid and Simmons have been as good as they've been and they're in this position, obviously, you know, in other words, if they go through this and the Nets knock them down for Giannis does, okay, it is what it is, but they are in position. They are in more of a position to win the NBA title than the Wizards have been in 40 years. And that is the point of the process.
Here was the quote from Leonsis. This was January of 2019. "We just played Philadelphia, and they have shoes that say, trust the process. And they were really, really bad for 7 years." It wasn't 7 years. It was less than that. "I looked when we beat them at home last week, and they had two guys they beat in the first, and they had two guys they picked in the first round in the lineup. That process is pretty risky in and of itself. And I don't think you can tell players, coaches, staff, don't make the playoffs and tank. We will never, ever tank." And so it's the perfect juxtaposition of that quote. It's "we will never, ever tank" versus the process. It's an interesting clash of philosophies.
It is. And one of them is right, and one of them is the other one. But, you know, look, it's noble to say we will never, ever tank, and then you do things like not trade Jeff Green and Trevor Ariza at the deadline accordingly and don't get assets back, and there you go. But in any event, we are going to end the podcast since I am still running the show because Fred has things to do, and I'd like to – yeah, Fred's busy.
Satisfied the readers. Before we wrap, I just want to remind the listeners that The Athletic is having a – $1 a month deal right now, and you can get it if you just go to my social media and like you go to my Twitter. You don't have to be on Twitter to do this, but just go to my Twitter and you can click on any of my stories that I've tweeted out. At the very top of my Twitter, I have a pinned tweet with the story that I did on Russell Westbrook about a week and a half ago. And you could just click on that link. You can sign up for $1 a month. I believe it's for 6 months, and you pay $6 to get 6 months of The Athletic, and it is a full subscription to The Athletic. It is everything. It's, you get my coverage, Ben's coverage, David Aldridge's coverage, you get NBA, you get NFL, you get everything that we cover. You get this podcast ad free as well, so you don't have to deal with me screaming at you to buy things in your ear. You can just listen to Wizards talk. So check that out. You can just, like I said, you go to my Twitter, just check out the pinned tweet or a recent article I wrote, and you can sign up right off of there. $1 a month. It's a really great offer. Strongly advise doing it. There's some incredible journalists who I work with, and I've been writing a lot lately, trying to get out as much content as I possibly can, because I know this is a big moment for fans. It's the playoffs, and it's fun, and I always try to work hard, but I try to ramp up the amount of content output come the playoffs, just because, you know, it's an important time. And I like reading about playoff coverage, and more people are watching, and I'm sure more people want to read about it. So I at least try to do that. And, you know, as you can tell with the podcast, we're going to be doing post-game shows after every single game of the Philly series. And if they win every single game beyond that, Ben is going to be on with me. He's staying up late and podcasting with me after those. Subscribe to Wizards After Dark. Tell your friends about Wizards After Dark. Go on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. Leave us a review. We'll be back after game one. Game one is Sunday, by the way, at 1 p.m. So we're actually going to be podcasting Wizards during light. It'll be. So it'll be, we'll change two words in that one. We'll be back on Sunday, either up after the game Sunday or up by Monday morning for sure. Talk to you guys then.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.